You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web, and your number one source for after-show entertainment. The AfterBuzz Studios in Los Angeles, California. Presented by Maria Menounos and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies. This is AfterBuzz TV's Salem After Show. We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest news and gossip. And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite TV show. It's AfterBuzz TV's Salem After Show.
Welcome in, guys, to episode 3 of our Salem After Show here on AfterBuzz TV. Episode titled In Vain. Thank you very much for joining us. I'm Bobby DeMuro, and as always, I don't do this alone, thankfully. Ladies, welcome. Hello.
Hey. Hi.
Hello.
Anna Koppel, Jesse Owen with us today. Everybody's a little freaked out. This show gets scarier. Not like scarier, but like creepier every episode. There's just little things.
Absolutely, yeah, and I don't know, and also we have Marissa with us too.
Oh, so. What's up, guys? Hey,
hey,
hey.
I like to introduce Marissa late because I think she just ruminates on everything that goes on, and then when none of us have like a cogent point, she just drops in with knowledge. That's what Marissa does.
Not to mention that our audience is just waiting with bated breath.
That's true.
To hear about Marissa, whether she's here, yeah, no.
She comes well reviewed.
She does. Marissa has a fan club. I don't know.
No, I don't think so. Thanks, guys. What's up, everyone?
Humble and deflecting. I like it. All right, guys. So it is In Vain. Before we get going on our first topic today, remember, if you are listening to us on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever else you listen to the podcast, or if you are watching us on YouTube, hit subscribe on your personal outlet of choice where you're following us. We want you guys to keep up with everything on the Salem After Show and everything AfterBuzz TV in general. And I know you guys are doing this at home, but keep doing it. Keep commenting on YouTube. Keep tweeting us. We want to hear from you guys. We're getting a lot of good feedback, and we always want to know how to make the show better, what you like about Salem, and what you think about us. So thank you very much for doing that. All right, let's get into episode 3, In Vain. Our first piece of news, I know we do news and gossip at the end, but I feel like we need to say congratulations at the start. Because if you just missed it about 3 hours ago, early on Monday afternoon here today, Salem and WGN has just announced Salem will be back for a second season.
Yeah, they were signed up for another, I think, 12 episodes, 12 or 13. Mm-hmm. But yeah, but it's great. Great news. I'm excited. I'll watch.
Three episodes into the first season, they're already giving them a second one. Good sign.
Mm-hmm. Great sign. Definitely. Yeah.
Ratings are good. Obviously, we love this thing. We wouldn't be doing the show if we didn't love this thing. But I think a lot of people love this, too. And judging by the reactions we've gotten from people and the reactions Salem's getting just generally, this thing may actually go somewhere. So congratulations to WGN. Good stuff. All right, let's get into Hail and Mary is our first topic today because in Vain, on this episode, we learn a little bit more about Hail and we learn a little bit more about his relationship with Mary, which is old world versus new world witches, and it's a little more complicated than that, but the two of them do not like each other. Pilot episode, we thought they were working together more or less and they were going to go through this great rite, and as we kind of unfold this onion of Salem, Massachusetts, we learn that that's not necessarily the case, and Hale and Mary may not have as much in common as we thought before. So guys, what are your initial reactions to Hale, to what Mary did to Hale, and to the fact that their relationship seems to be deteriorating very quickly?
Well, I'm really excited that there's not as much in common here. I love that there's like old versus new, and I want to know what it is exactly that there's old versus new. I've always found it interesting that there's so many different branches of Christianity, and that you know there's so much debate like within really ultimately the same religion. So I would like to see a similar thing happening in Salem. That you know. Really, you guys are fighting for the same God here.
No, it makes good sense. It's sort of like almost like a religious denomination or sect. And that's a great way to put it.
Right.
That
yeah.
Just because they're all witches doesn't mean they're believing the same or they have the same way of going about it.
Right. So I hope we do see that sort of religious war, civil war going on within the witches. And that kind of thing really fascinates me in general anyway. But yeah, what do you think, Jesse?
I don't know. I kind of think they're more alike than we think. I think what separates them is, you know, back in that time, it's still the power of a woman versus the power of a man. Mm. I think he really has a problem with a woman dictating what he does and controlling him, But I mean, I do think some of their values are different, but that goes back to your whole, you know, old witch, new witch, the values. But I think it has a lot to do with him being more concerned that she's a woman.
That's a great point. Uh-oh, Marissa's like chomping at the bit. Go, Marissa.
I think going off the power thing, I think it's a continuous power struggle between the two, because we see Magistrate, he has political... he has the political aspect over people, and people listen to him in that way, and he has that rhetoric. And then we have Mary, who has her witchcraft that she's trying to use to gain power throughout the community. So I think it's the two different powers constantly going against each other. And then on top of the time with the woman versus man, that's also another big thing as well. So it's a constant power struggle.
I think the woman versus man thing, Jesse, is a great point that I never thought. I wish I could take credit for it, but it's your point. I didn't think of it. No, but the idea that, remember when Magistrate Hale was at breakfast and Anne and his wife, her mother, came back, and Anne confronted him and told him off and said, how many more innocent people are going to die? The mother was very quiet and very deferential when he was there. He flipped out on Anne and left, and only after he left did the mother side with the daughter very quietly, which shows not only that male versus female relationship at that time period, but that Magistrate Hale does not take kindly to powerful women. You'd think if he was going to take kindly to one, you'd think it'd be his daughter, and he would listen sensitively, and he didn't do that.
Well, he does love his daughter, of course, as we see. And but it's interesting because my, I guess, assumption about what happens with witches or possession or whatever is that some sort of profound understanding takes over one's body, or I don't know. You get a new soul, or I don't know what happens, but I guess they still have like these really sort of old or traditional values. Like, yeah, you know, I understand what's going on here for centuries, just sort of like unlocked secrets that I could not begin to understand. Well, but you are still a woman, so.
No, that's a good question. I have no idea. I actually don't know. But and related to that, one thing that I wonder, and it's really stupid and really simple, so if somebody knows the answer better than I do, please let us know. Logistically, if Magistrate Hale is an old world witch, how is he physically able to have a normal child? Does he turn it on and off when he wants to reproduce?
Well,
is that a dumb question?
I mean, but maybe he becomes a witch after.
Yeah, I was like, when did he become a witch?
No, because his family, remember he said that they burned at the stake, but also, like, maybe they did something to where the woman, his wife, got pregnant. He calls it because they can take away a baby. Why can't they make one happen? A normal one. You know?
And so the point was he just wanted a normal family to infiltrate a community for these ends and goals.
I wonder if his wife even knows he's a witch.
I assume not. We've only saw her just today, but I would guess not, but I have no idea.
I wonder if Anne is like a super witch, but she just doesn't even know it.
Interesting. Mm.
Prediction.
And she can, yeah, that is a prediction. Let's just hold on to that one, but that is a good one. So let's talk about Anne a little bit, because when we look at Hale and Mary Sibley, Mary does something dirty, and oh, did it work so well when she blackmails Magistrate Hale by almost killing Anne, and Magistrate Hale has to come to her hat in hand quite literally and say, please don't kill her. I acquiesce. You have all the power. You can do this and that. Yes, yes, just save her. Mary's playing hardball, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Dirty. She's playing dirty. And to go back, that we question if Hale's wife actually knows. We don't see that because she only asked the question, you know, where did you go? But I think any normal woman would be like, what did you do? Who, like, what happened during the time that Anne got better and you were gone? Who were you talking to for her to get her condition to become better? So the fact that the wife's not even asking those questions, like, what's going on here?
Yeah. Also, why did you leave while our daughter was asphyxiating? Like, what's that about?
Exactly. Like, why are you missing during the time your daughter needs you the most?
Yeah. What she said was interesting. When Hale came back, he said, now I know a parent will do anything for the life of their child.
Mm-hmm.
And then, and that's something that we learned about him, is that I guess his parents sent him away. And hopefully we'll learn more about that. But then his wife asked, what did you do for your child? So she obviously has some sort of suspicion about him and what he does, but he didn't answer her, so.
Or maybe it just goes back to that being deferential, that, like you say, she wanted to know all the questions, but maybe it's not in that time period in her life a woman's place to ask those questions. And if she asks one and he answers or rebuffs her, that's it. And she has to just say, okay, nothing more. You know, you're the master of the house or whatever. Mm-hmm. And he is an intimidating guy. So maybe she thought from his status in town, he knows what he's doing. I don't maybe believe in it, but I'm not going to rock the boat.
And she didn't really question, like, what was going on with Anne either, because if you think, like, a lot of those situations, if that would have happened to anybody else but Magistrate Hill's daughter, it would have been considered, like, witchcraft, or they were a witch, or, you know, something was wrong, but it's like nothing even happened. Like, no one questioned it. It was normal.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just done, and Anne's better, and that's it, and there's no repercussions for this. But when Isaac flips out, and he's of lower status and in a different situation, oh, everybody's going to question it, and we're going to make a public spectacle out of it.
But but also, Isaac was in the public. Everyone saw that, and Anne wasn't. She was in her own house with her parents or mother, but so no one saw that. So, and because Magistrate's so high up, he can keep that under wraps.
Well, but somebody did, like, come running through the town saying, it's your daughter.
Yeah, that's true.
So,
and then Dr. Lamb sees everything. He dealt with Isaac, and then he was there again for Anne. Now, I don't know if he's going to, you know, leak information or whatever you would call it, but he saw everything. But you're right. It wasn't a public meltdown like what Isaac had. Yeah.
Yeah. So what I was surprised that the doll ended up being used against Magistrate Hale and not Anne herself or John in some way. Did that surprise any of you?
Yeah, definitely. But I think she would have used it because of John anyway. But I think she just got ahead of herself and was like, I have to stop this now. Because she was, you know, she basically told him to back off and he wasn't going to back off. So she had to immediately take, you know, steps to make that happen.
I wonder what happened to the doll. Do you think it stayed in the room now that everything's okay?
No, because he saw the doll and he immediately knew.
So he got away. He got rid of it.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
We didn't see it, but she can just infiltrate with another doll.
Yeah.
That was like a 2-minute scene. So you can put dolls in everybody's room in town, theoretically.
Yeah.
As long as you have enough, you know, rat guts and whatever else.
But it also just shows how calculated Mary is to think 2 steps ahead already, to already implant that and then have something against Hale and then use it. So she's very calculated. She has everything in her head.
Yeah.
Anything more on Magistrate Hale and Mary before we move on? I guess the tension is palpable, obviously, and it went over the top. But I assume, and I don't want to do too many predictions, but I assume they're going to keep fighting. There's going to be an issue with the two of them because this new world, old world thing, they don't see eye to eye and they have different goals and the great right means different things. And they're just not, they're not going to link up and they don't realize they're playing for the same team almost.
Right. Well, just one more thing really quickly about Magistrate Hale, just because I have a couple of questions about it. When he is in the Sears shack, I guess, and John follows him there, is he the wolf or somebody else is the wolf? The one that attacks John?
I think what I took from that is that the monkey, which is a weird animal to have in that shack in Massachusetts in 1692.
Yeah.
But
he's just like, oh, yeah, it's a monkey.
Yeah, he just takes it as a monkey.
Any
you know,
of those creatures, really.
Yeah, I mean, an owl, yeah. I get, you know, I understand the owl maybe or whatever it was.
A lizard or a chameleon, whatever they're using.
Yeah, a lot of those were like, how many, you know, explorers had gone to places where monkeys had literally like, brought them back or whatever. But the monkey, the owl or the bird or whatever, and then the dog or the wolf, I just took to mean were like stuffed dead creatures in real life. And the seer, Petrus, just had the ability to give them life in some way. So I didn't take it to mean it was Magistrate Hale. Maybe it was. Because we never see the wolf and Magistrate Hale together.
We also saw Hale was the one who was pulling John Alden away from the wolf.
But it was after he fell through the door. Alden fell through the door, and then Hale was there. So technically, I don't think they were together, so maybe it could have been.
Where did Petrus go?
That's another good question.
He was there when Hale left, and then John came because he was following him, but he disappeared.
And I assume they were all witches or souls or of some sort because they all had, like, the red yarn or red thread over their eyes. So, and that was, like, that's how we saw them in the woods.
Yeah.
That they all had the red over their eyes. So, I don't know. That was my assumption. So, we don't really know.
Yeah, who knows?
If anybody wants to tweet at us, then.
All right, well, let's move on to topic number 2 is Isaac, the fornicator. You could call this episode, it was called In Vain. You could also probably call it Everybody Hates Isaac. Because
he
had a bad day.
Yeah.
He had a real bad day.
I feel like he had a really good day in the end, actually.
Well, yeah, he did live.
Yeah. It's probably the best day anybody's had in Salem in a long time.
That's true.
And not only did he live, but, you know, he had friends just pulling out all the stops for him. He had Mary Sibley helping him out. Come on.
That's true.
Yeah.
Looking at it differently, the people who have been under the gun in Salem all get killed. All their friends turn on him. And Isaac, everybody helped him, and he lived. So maybe he did have the best
Isaac,
day.
Who actually fornicated.
Okay, but, forget everybody hates Isaac. We'll call his show The Best Week Ever.
Yeah.
But I also think it was that because when Isaac was publicly condemned the first time, that was on him. But we see that he felt bad about it. He had remorse. And we see that moment where he regrets that. And so I think having that and then being, again, publicly humiliated and people realizing it, maybe this isn't him. He's under the influence of something that, like, he can't control this. Something's wrong. And because he's already, you know, regretting what he has remorse, so why would he do it again? Something's wrong.
Do you think that his name could be restored in Salem after this event?
Maybe. I mean, he seems like a very redeemable guy because we saw him be a human and have remorse, and we saw everyone else helping him.
Yeah. Well, we love Isaac. I mean, yeah. There's not a question.
I feel bad for the guy, and it was a good thing that everyone else did too.
Is there any doubt now from you guys that Abigail, the one he fornicated with, that there was some kind of foul play involved with her death or her disappearance? Because he mentioned she disappeared. She didn't just run away. Something happened to her. And whether it was Mary, who at some point became a witch in that interim, and I don't know if it was her, or if it was Magistrate Hale, something happened to her.
Yeah, I mean, but she disappeared. I don't know. I don't know what happened to her, but yeah, that's obviously a question. But I do, I really appreciated that moment that he and Mary shared, that, you know, remember when. It was just sort of sad, but go ahead.
I was going to say, it was a good moment when it happened, when he was there, and he was very deferential. I thought that was really subtle acting on their part, because he would be deferential. He never looked her in the eye. His face was always down. It was very well done. But it was good in the moment, and then Mary turns around and totally uses it against him to try to get John Alden's name out of, or whoever's name it was, out of Isaac. And when it turns out to be John Alden's name in that dream he had with Abby, who wasn't Abby, she stops it and kind of flips out. But that was another Mary playing hardball. You know, let's fake Abby, get a name out of Isaac. Let's do it the dirty way. So,
why was Isaac there to see Mary? Do we know that?
He brought something for George Sibley. He had a package or something, because that's what he does around town. I think it was that simple, and she just started talking to him.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, I feel like Isaac is powerful in some way. He seems to know a lot about what's going on. He knows about what happens in the woods. And as much as he was questioned at first when they put that sludge on his eyes and his mouth and whatever, when they first set him up to be a witch, that was some sort of spell that they put on him, and they were saying, who are you with, who are you with? And he kept saying, I was alone. So he's powerful. He has something going on. And it took Mary, who is, like, the one, and she really was working hard to get an answer. And he still didn't say that Cotton was there. So he was still holding back information.
Or Cotton knew about it, knew that they went out there.
Yeah, he wasn't there.
He wasn't physically in the woods, but he knew about it.
Oh, okay, you're right.
John did take Cotton, but they didn't see anybody.
Yeah.
Right, that's right.
Okay. But no, you're right. Isaac's loyal to a fault, loyal through these spells, and won't drop names, and finally gives up the name, and it turns out that it was the only name that Mary wasn't going to do anything about at this point. But yeah, I mean, truly a stand-up guy, loyal, whatever else you want to say about him.
Strong-willed.
Maybe the most likable character on the show, besides John Alden, but in a different way.
I want to know who the Goyle was. Like, you know, the girl who was putting the black mud on Isaac? Like, what was that all about? Because she was telling Magistrate Hale she didn't want to do this. And, I mean, who was that? It almost, in a way, at first, I believed that it was Abby at first. But then I was like, I don't know. It says Goyle.
Interesting.
Ghoul.
Yeah.
I could hear you say the word ghoul in your southern accent. All it's just awesome. I love it. No, that's a good question. I don't know who that was anyways. And there were other, they all look like women, but there were other weird women demon ghouls involved in that. And I don't know if it's just like witches that come up from the tar pit that we saw a couple episodes ago, or if it was specific people. You know, who knows?
Yeah, because she seemed like she just didn't want to do that to Isaac. And is there a reason? Because, I mean, she's supposed to be evil, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. Just food for thought.
Interesting. What else about Isaac, guys? He's, I think it was Magistrate Hale who mentioned it. Half the town thinks you're a pervert, and half the town thinks, what did he use, an idiot or a simpleton or something?
Drunk or
so it, but something kind of pejorative.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was like, I don't know, he obviously doesn't hold a lot of standing in the town, but he seems like a very hard worker who's well respected enough for who he is. So it's like, now that he's survived and moved forward, and we will see how much he gets involved down the road, he might be fairly safe from the witches from here on out, because he sort of withstood the initial charge, and then really nobody has anything against him because he's not smart enough to do what John Alden and Cotton are doing and kind of plan against these witches. He's just kind of a, you know, I don't want to say the word idiot, but he's just kind of a guy there hanging out, you know, ready to help, whatever, innocent here, whatever.
I was going to say, unless he starts telling everyone what he saw in the woods, you know, and then he becomes a problem.
Well, I think it that even if he did start doing that, he's already, like, run through the town babbling so much that people might not believe him, you know? Because he's just...
What was he saying? Isaac the fornicator, hide your wives, hide your sheep.
Thank you for saying that.
Yeah.
That,
it's like that guy.
The YouTube video. Yes, the Antoine Dodson, the YouTube video, like, hide your kids, hide your wives. That's exactly what it was. I looked it up when we were watching. I looked up on Google on my phone. I was like, what is that guy's name? Antoine Dodson. Absolutely, that's what it was. They're gonna do a remake. Have you seen the song? You guys have seen the song on YouTube about Antoine. They're going to do a remake with Isaac, where it's like the auto-tune with Isaac, hide your wife. That would be great.
Oh, my gosh.
Somebody
that's
should
so
do that.
Funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's – thank you for saying that. I totally forgot about it. That's one of the funniest things. One more thing about Isaac. Anna, I'm going to give this one to you. But when he gets taken out of jail, John Alden says two words to him that are not 1692 words.
No, you do it. You're the one who noticed it.
I just know that this is like your crusade. But
it's not my crusade.
John says to him, you're sprung. Who in 1692 would say sprung? That's like a 50s, like, buddy cop movie, kind of like, you know. I would expect to see, like, I don't know, Robert Meacham or somebody in a movie in the 50s where, like, hey, you're sprung, kid.
Maybe the twist is that he wasn't really at war for 7 years. He was in the future.
Mind blown.
Oh,
maybe he was at war, but it was World War II.
Yeah, and so that's why. He's just like... Get the F out of here. Isaac was wrong.
Wait a minute.
Jesus Christ.
That makes perfect sense. Because all of our language issues in this show about not timely language, it's all John Alden. Yeah, he's the one who's cussing. He's the one who's cussing like a modern day, you know, person or whatever. He says you're sprung. Maybe he was in the future. Yeah. Here's what you do. Somebody on the show next week, ask him about Doc Brown and the DeLorean.
That's what you do. That's what you do.
But also, if you think about it, John Alden, I think... From what we have seen, he's the only one who's actually left the place and gone somewhere else for 7 years. So maybe he picked up lingo from another town and then just brought it back with him.
That's fair.
Yeah.
And
a lot of these people are just immigrants from England. So they've lived in England and they bring that their conservative Puritan values to one city. And that's a good point.
I don't know if you guys have seen the movie The Town, but it's like Puritan England. And it turns out it's like modern day. But these people have just like... secluded themselves in like a wildlife preserve in a town, but anyway, like maybe Salem's like that, but everywhere else they're normal, but there's in like... Salem they're just like hanging witches.
So that's why John can't leave town. He can't give up the secret again. Interesting.
Right.
Speaking of John, I kind of think there might be something special about him, since the seer couldn't see him. I mean, he said his face was down, but I mean, John clearly saw the frog, you know, in the woods.
Maybe, just speaking off the top of my head, maybe it has something to do with the idea that everybody in town is either a witch or totally believes in this and is terrified of the hysteria and stuff. And John is the only truly skeptical, maybe besides Anne, is the only truly skeptical, this isn't witches, this is ridiculous sort of thing. And maybe the fact that he's mentally removed himself from the hysteria means that psychologically turning into physical, he cannot be seen by the seer. I don't know. It gives him a power.
Didn't he like shoot him in the face? Was that him?
No, that was... Who was the one who fired the shot? Was it John?
John Alden fired the shot at the pig face guy.
Which was Hale, right? Yeah.
Hale.
But either way, I mean, they were all there and he fired a shot.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's weird that nobody can see John. Very weird.
predictions.
Yeah, that will come up in a minute. Let's go to some more minor characters if we're done with Isaac the Fornicator, at least for now.
I have a note under Isaac. I want to know what the spell of it's Vete Cupido.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I want to know what that is. So, listeners, if you know what that is, let us know.
I'm trying to look it up right now.
Who took Latin in high school?
I assume that it's some sort of like love spell because he went in. They gave him like a woman's necklace, and then he went right to the whorehouse. And he's known to be a fornicator. And when he went into the whorehouse, he was like grabbing the women, and he kept saying like hide your wives. So
and Mary used the spell with his love of his life against him too.
Yeah, so some sort of love spell.
Hmm. The only word I know in that is vitae, which is like curriculum vitae, like your resume. Have you ever heard that phrase, your CV, your curriculum vitae? Mm-hmm. All right, well, I'm glad I brought it up. But I don't know what it means. I didn't take Latin, I'm sorry to say. I'm sure all of our parents would be disappointed in us. Well, let's move on to some more minor characters then. The biggest minor character, at least from today, that we learn a little bit more about is Gloriana.
Yes.
Can we just call her Cotton's girlfriend?
Yes.
Can we just say they're Facebook official?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. They're in a relationship. We learn more about her, and we learn that she is not buying what Cotton's selling. She thinks she's next at some point. She thinks she's not safe. She's totally wrapped up in the hysteria, and maybe rightfully so, because she almost got wrapped up in it with Bridget Bishop in court in episode 2. And Cotton is just trying to convince her of otherwise. The interesting scene with Gloriana to me in this show was she tried to do the same thing to Cotton that John Alden earlier tried to do to Mary, which was like, hey, let's leave this town. Let's get out of these witches and let's be something else. And it's like a prostitute or whatever word you want to use for her and a reverend leaving town and just getting married and being together. And I don't know what they would have done, but that's a funny combination. But she tries to do the same thing John does and sort of leave this thing. She's not going anywhere. I don't want to predict it, but I think she's in trouble in the future. The hammer's going to come down on her.
Gloriana?
Yes.
I kind of agree, and I don't think Cotton's going to be able to stop it.
I think Cotton is going to start it because he's got so much to lose. He's the one who's, talk about, you know, living in fornication, living in sin. He's doing that, and if something comes along where she wants to drop his name or somebody catches them, she's got to go because he has a reputation to protect.
I at one point thought she kind of made him mad, but he kind of turned it. He surprised me a little bit when she said, do you think that you're doing good or are you just trying to please your father? Mm-hmm. I kind of thought that might tick him off a little bit.
Listen, they need to stop talking about Increase Mather in bed. The daddy issues are out. They're out of control. No more talking about dad in bed. New rule.
Yeah. New rule. I agree. But I see Gloriana as more of a moral compass and like the voice of reason in behind the Salem trials and all that, because she's asking about evidence. Where's the evidence? Is the evidence strong enough to actually hang innocent people? And she's asking the questions that the audience are, because right now we just see them killing people one by one. But there's really no fair trial for them. So I think she is the good person, Gloriana, for the only person that might be able to sway Cotton in a certain way.
Is this, and this is a big question, and feel free to disagree with me. I'm just wondering, and I'm curious on your opinions. On some level, is there a thread of anti-Christianity or anti-religion in this show? Because Cotton is such a crusader and so overtly religious, and the two kind of skeptic, level-headed people, John Alden, who is definitely not Christian in the traditional sense in Massachusetts then, and Gloriana, who by virtue of her occupation would not be seen as a good Christian, those two are constantly trying to bring Cotton back to earth and saying, come back to earth, don't do this, don't be ridiculous. Are they sort of the John and Gloriana sort of the metaphor for maybe this anti-theocratic state or this anti-Christian idea in this show? Or am I reading way too much into that?
I don't think they're anti-Christian. I think that they see all the things that the idea of Christianity is doing to the town, and I think that makes them be like, hey, this is wrong. Maybe this isn't so great, but I still think that they believe that there is a God, and they believe in doing good and the morals and the values. So, I mean, I still think that they're, what's the word? Not
faithful.
I say holy roller. They're not holy rollers, but mm-hmm. they believe in God.
Well, I think this show, like life, poses a lot of great questions.
Are you running for mayor or something? There's a political answer.
Koppel for mayor.
Koppel for mayor.
2014. But But I think in this, I noticed this episode in particular, actually, probably a lot of the questions that we've been asking ourselves, they asked and answered. You know, the conversation that Mary had with Rose in the woods, she said, well, this can't all be in vain. And did I have a choice in this? You know, and Rose said, you have to sort of like live up to your choices here. And she said, did I have a choice? You know, is it too late for me to regret this? Can I still question this? And so that gives the audience an opportunity to say, like, well, wait a minute. Like, is Mary as evil as we think she is? And yeah, and here's another opportunity. I actually wrote down the quote that Gloriana said to Cotton. She said, do you wish to do good or please your father? And then at the end he said, I believe I'm doing good. And she said, I know, and your father would be proud of you. And so I think it plays with all of that stuff that, so I guess the short answer is no, I don't think it's a commentary on Christianity. But you know, there's a lot of gray area and a lot of intention base and a lot of conversation to be had about it.
Marissa, what about you?
I agree. I don't think it's to go like anti-religious or whatever. I think it is just because as crusading, as extreme as Cotton Mather can get to, I think it's Gloriana and Alden who are the ones who have to like keep him back and bring him back, like you guys said, back down to earth and like knock him down a bit and, you know, bring him back to reality. I think those are the two people who have to keep him from doing something extremely outrageous. So I think it's that, and they still have their strong beliefs and values and whatnot, but it's for everyone, the betterment of everyone.
Who, if I'm thinking about that, who has the most power in town? Not looking at supernatural powers with Hale and Mary, but like if you were to have a power ranking in town, is Cotton the one driving most of this? Is Hale the one? Who's the most powerful? Or does it change every episode?
Well, I think, you know, Hale answered that for us. He said it's no one man. It's not one person. Yeah, I would say we know the major players are going to be Mr. and Mrs. Hale, or Mr. and Mrs. Sibley, and Hale and Cotton are probably the biggest driving forces, I think. Ladies?
Yeah. A little twist here. I think as the show progresses, like, other people might get power. And the reason why I say this is when Anne's mother was talking to Anne, she was telling her about how you have to be like Mary Sibley, and, you know, basically she's a role model. But the way the town sees it is she married George Sibley and then she took over. She got this power. Well, Anne was fantasizing about Cotton. So I almost wonder if Anne's going to come on to Cotton, something's going to happen and there's
Oh, and that foursome, in the foursome dream. Mm-hmm. Well, and John. John
could,
was there, too.
I could be just thinking way too much into it. But I don't know.
Nothing like a foursome dream in 1692.
I know.
It's a great way to start the episode.
Anne is of age. She's over 18, right?
She's definitely younger.
Yeah.
They had Anne in, you know, original Salem,
yeah,
who was 14.
Ooh, and goodness.
But I still haven't figured out if they're trying to relate the characters because she was one of the possessed girls.
Maybe she'll still get possessed. I just hope she's of age so that I don't feel guilty about the pending love between her and John Alden.
Well, back then it wasn't like a big deal, was it?
I don't know. I just feel uncomfortable. I'm invested in John. I don't want him to do anything weird.
Well, back then they married young, right?
Yeah, they did.
Yeah.
Okay.
And also to go back to who has the most power, I think it's Hale and Cotton because they have the political influence over everyone. And they are, unfortunately, they are guys. And they're the men that they're going to be. They already have the power and ranking because mm-hmm. no one's going to listen to a woman. And then, obviously, we see Mary with her power, but no one's going to listen to her.
Speaking of Cotton, maybe the last relationship to hash out, and we can talk about Rose a little bit, too, actually, in a minute. We just meet her. But before we get there, let's talk about this. I call it a buddy cop movie between Cotton and John Alden. They're kind of friends. They're kind of not. I don't know if I'd call them friends, but they have to be unlikely allies going forward. We didn't see as much of it in this episode as we did in episode 2, but there was a very cute moment after the fight when Cotton hands the handkerchief or whatever to John, and he's talking about how, you know, I would have built character if I got in fights a couple times. And John says something to the effect of, like, yeah, it would have done you good. Like, yeah. You should have gotten your butt kicked.
Yeah.
That is true.
I mean, he should have, and it's true. Cotton needed his, you know, he needed to be put into his place. But those two are growing on each other on some level.
Yeah, I think we can definitely see the growing mutual respect that they have for each other, even though they might not agree with each other every single day, but they have the same objective and the same goals and some of the same values. But it's the respect you see in the end.
Yeah.
And I don't think that respect would have been there had John not seen what happened in the woods.
Or had John not then come and testified to add to that, and Cotton has so much book knowledge, which he's never applied before about witches and supposedly knows everything, John just has real-life experiential knowledge about witches and has no idea what it means, and it magically matches up. So it's like, wait a minute, we each have our strengths. We need to figure out some kind of way to work together.
Right.
It's like a sitcom almost.
Yeah, that's why I started laughing. Like, they both have, like, the other side of the amulet or something, you know?
Like, it's like we're watching Full House in Salem in 1692, and it's, okay, too much?
Yeah,
it's like Danny Tanner. It's like Uncle Jesse and Uncle Joey. All right, let's talk about Rose. We just meet Rose very briefly today. She is counseling Mary about the choices Mary's made, and brings us the title of the episode, In Vain, like you were talking about. Rose as a... I guess almost a grandmother figure.
Yeah, who's Rose? Because
fairy godmother. Come on,
she. No, kidding. Because up until this point, we've just seen that like Tituba has been the one giving Mary all of the advice and guidance, and this is how it's going to go. And now suddenly something happens, and Mary's like, "Get me Rose," like as though she's the one who has all of the answers, and she did tonight. So, but who is she?
I don't know, but she was talking about how she can only help them to a certain point. Like, I guess she's, like, hidden in the woods or wherever she was. Like, nobody really knows who she is in town.
Maybe it's Petrus's wife. Probably not, but I actually don't know. I mean, they're sort of both in that weird stage where they're not part of town, but they're also supernatural. Who knows?
I kind of saw maybe as Rose as a mentor towards Mary and maybe like a surrogate mother in a way, just for the regular human conflicts that Mary's having. So I don't know if she a witch too?
She's old.
100%. I don't know if she's old world.
Because Mary said you're old, and she said yes, but I see whatever that we need to work together. But and she's a woman, and they had that whole conversation.
Okay, because I was gonna say she's definitely outside the fray. She might be old world technically, but she's definitely like, here's the thing: it's new world versus old world. Here's my advice. So she's not on a side, or maybe she's on Mary's side, but she's not on Hale's side.
I don't know. I think she kind of like grew up with Hale because the way that she was talking, she was like, you need to listen to him and, you know, respect
him. Don't underestimate him.
That's what she said. Don't underestimate, because his whole family burned at the stake. I think that's when we learned that. And, you know, so he's strong because of this. And yeah, so she knows about his history and knows that he's, you know, somebody to contend with. So
I don't know.
That's all we know about her. That's all I know about her.
Maybe we'll see more coming up. Unless we have any more.
How about George?
Yeah, let's do a little bit of George.
A little bit of George.
Actually, that's a great point, because he doesn't do anything in any of these episodes because he's, you know, there's literally a frog in his throat.
Yeah.
And then a big thing happens at the very end when her knitting needle is taken. Credit to Jesse Owen for the phrase knitting needle. We were sitting in the screening room. You missed this. We're sitting in the screening room, and I'm writing notes and stuff, and I go, Jesse, what would you call that, like, metal thing that Mary uses to knit? And Jesse's like, a knitting needle? Seriously? So thank you for that phrase.
No problem.
George Sibley uses it, stabs his own leg. Is it suicide? I mean, I took it to mean suicide. He's just trying to end the misery. Or is there something else?
Why would you stab yourself in the leg? Like, really, just get right here.
Jeez.
Jesse's like, I've thought about killing myself with a knitting needle a lot.
Jesse's like, I've got a lot of experience stabbing people with knitting needles.
Gotta get it where it counts.
Yeah, I mean, there is like a major vein that you could stab yourself in the leg, but he was nowhere near it.
Yeah.
No, he wasn't.
Yeah, so.
And then he was like, at first I thought it was blood coming out of his mouth when he was like trying to get I guess the frog out of his throat, but like all his food was, I guess he was making himself throw up or something.
I don't know what he was doing.
I don't know.
It's gross.
Well, he was gagging himself the first time to get the try to get the frog out, but then we find out that it's under Mary's influence that only the frog comes out, which is poor guy.
I mean,
to have it constantly in your stomach, ew. But then I don't understand the second reason why he stabbed himself, though.
I thought he was trying to get the frog out somehow, but...
But you can't get the frog out through your leg.
Well, in the previews, remember it showed, like, a leg, and then it showed, like, the blood coming out? Like, and you said it was a snake.
It was
remember,
a snake. It was a snake.
Remember how Mary...
I paused it. It was a snake, because you could see the tongue.
It's almost like she was, like, maybe thinking that the frog would come out.
Don't forget how Mary fed the frog.
With a nipple.
With a mouse?
On the leg.
Yeah.
So if you're George Sibley and you're screwed up anyways, maybe your mindset says... Maybe this thing comes out. Maybe there's something in your leg that this thing responds to. So maybe that was it. I don't know.
Hmm. We're obviously not supposed to know.
Yeah, no doubt.
We'll obviously find out soon.
Yeah.
I hope,
yeah. It was really weird, though, and gross.
George Sibley, at the end of the day, may be the only Salem resident who lives the entire season because he's just kind of there. He's sort of sitting there the rest of the way. There's nothing for him to do. I mean, if he died, maybe a serious question about him. If he died... Does Mary lose any influence in town? Or is she still seen... Really?
All of it.
But he's useless.
Yeah, but he's alive.
Is anyone questioning where George Sibley is, though?
I think they all know that he's, like, incapacitated in some way, but they don't know about the frog.
Yeah.
Remember, and Isaac says to her, he's like, you've done such good work, so patient to take care of George.
You've taken on this burden. Yeah.
Okay.
But who's calling all the shots? Because... It had been like Mary was kind of in charge, but how can a woman be in charge then?
I think she almost rules informally out of fear and influence and stuff. And then Hale and Cotton and those guys are more technically in charge. But to me, like if George dies, it's at this point, the way Mary is, it's sort of the same difference. People will still respect her for being powerful. I don't know if anything changes and why she couldn't just kill him. But I mean, am I wrong? I don't know.
I mean, she would still have the money and everything, but I don't think she would have the same influence.
Really?
Really.
Huh.
Yeah, I don't think she would have influence either.
Interesting.
I mean, it's... When is it? 1692?
Yeah.
Yeah. When your husband dies in 1692, I think he's just dead. I don't think you get to carry on as, like, Queen of Salem.
No, and not technically, but I just mean, like, from an informal perspective of, like, people still fearing her. Because it's been her for a while. He's been incapacitated for a while.
She already has this control with the spells and everything. So I think people would be scared of her and probably give in to her regardless because she would make them.
Yeah. Yeah, as far as a lot of the town's concerned, from my perspective, it's like George is almost dead because he's not doing anything. But maybe not.
Okay.
Yeah, what if he exposes her?
See, I think that's why he's going to stay alive. I think he will. But let's do news and gossip before we get to predictions. We've got some news today. AfterBuzz TV News. Did you have one extra thing? Oh, okay, cool. Well, our first one, we obviously talked about at the start, the second season, so we won't go over that again. But we are very happy because that means we get to talk about Salem for another 12 or 13 episodes, in addition to these 13. Lucky people. All right, two fun pieces of news, nothing groundbreaking. The first one, Janet Montgomery, who plays Mary Sibley, talked to Access Hollywood about Salem and filming on set. They film in Louisiana. And she said to them, she told them two different things had happened on set, and she thinks that their set is cursed. Creepy, right?
Yeah.
She had appendicitis, missed 2 weeks because of an emergency appendectomy, and they had to shut down filming at some point earlier for 2 weeks to wait for her, which is creepy enough. And then the guy who plays Isaac the Fornicator, actor's name is Itto Goldberg, he broke his hand during the production, and she says, quote, the producers have talked about getting someone to bless the land because they thought the land was cursed, and yeah, there's spooky stuff happening, but maybe we're just unlucky. I don't know.
No, it's New Orleans, Louisiana, voodoo.
So we got voodoo and witches. I can't keep up.
Voodoo witches.
Well, also, if you think about it, True Blood takes place in Louisiana, too. So there's a bunch of witches going on there.
Yeah.
Don't you love the South?
American Horror Story Coven was in New Orleans this season, too.
All right, number two. Yes, I do love the South, Jesse. And our second piece of news, Ashley Madekwe, who we haven't seen a ton of. She plays Tituba. She told AssignmentX.com about The Crucible. We haven't talked about The Crucible. It's Arthur Miller's very famous play, sort of one of the standard canonical works of American theater. But also about Salem and the witch trials. And she said that she read The Crucible as a young woman. I don't know how young she was. Saw the movie version with Daniel Day-Lewis when she was in drama school. Was in the play at a young age herself. And had always pictured herself playing Tituba. And she left Revenge about this time last year, popular show Revenge, and took on this role. And I think this is like her. She said she's trying to make it her own. This is the one she wanted. She's been thinking about this for years. So I have a feeling she's talking so strongly about Tituba and the role, she's going to have a much bigger play in coming episodes.
Yeah, that's. I suspect that too. I also host the after show for Revenge. but yeah, when she left, and then I saw her come up here, I knew it had to be because Revenge is a hit show. You know, you don't leave a hit show and go to unless you really believe in the script and the part. So
yeah, and if she's had her eyes on it for years or whatever. By the way, the movie The Crucible would be something to watch with Daniel Day-Lewis. Very different from this, but fascinating in its own right.
It's a nice reference too, because we do see the characters also in that production play story. So it's a nice reference to go back to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, I think it's prediction time, guys.
And now, your AfterBuzz TV predictions.
Who would like to begin?
I'll go.
Go for it.
Okay, so I think Gloriana is actually a witch. And I think that the thing that I was going to bring up before we started doing news and gossip is we forgot to mention that Mary has vowed allegiance to John at this point. Okay, so and Jesse, you mentioned that Anne was sort of like fantasizing about Mary's place in society. So I think Anne will actually go to Mary to sort of, I don't know what you would call it, but just sort of have her mentor her in some way. And Mary will, because now she has pled or vowed to sort of partner up with John, and there's really, she would have to sort of at least fake it.
Kind of like keep your friends close and your enemies closer.
Yeah, exactly. Interesting. So I think they're going to pair up.
I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, that's me. All right.
I kind of gave away all my predictions throughout the whole show.
Well, I kind of think to maybe go off of that a little bit. I saw, because we saw tonight when Anne was talking to her mother, and mother said you have to have a voice. I see Anne, she's going to become a bigger, stronger person, more influential, maybe to go against Hill, her father, maybe to go against Mary. So if she is going to partner up with Mary, it would just to be get all those skills and resources to go up against Mary later on down the road.
Totally. Which, that's actually one of my predictions, too, that Anne may use Mary. But Mary's going to use Anne, too. Let's be clear about that.
Oh, yeah.
And I think Mary is going to be very suspicious of Anne, whatever that relationship develops, because Anne is still Magistrate Hale's daughter. And Mary doesn't know if, hey, maybe Magistrate Hale is having her infiltrate unbeknownst to herself, and I need to be careful what I tell Anne, and I need to be careful with whatever. My other prediction, you guys, I think Salem's going to get a second season.
Yeah, that's good.
Pretty good prediction,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I think it's just, we know that Anne is Hale's pretty much Achilles' heel, so Mary's just going to keep using Anne to have power over Hale. So we're going to see more of that coming.
Yeah.
I don't know, more throwing up blood, who knows?
I kind of predict that that Hale's not finished. Like, it's not going to go as smooth as he was like, okay, Isaac can go. My daughter's safe. I think it's about to get really dirty.
Sure.
Like, I mean, she messed with him.
Literally and figuratively dirty. what about Isaac? Where do we see Isaac going in the next couple episodes?
Isaac for city council.
Couple for mayor, Isaac for city council.
Yeah. I think Isaac is the eyes and ears for John Alden and Cotton Mather. He's definitely going to help in that way because he knows everyone and knows the town. And he is, you can see he is a good guy, because when he gave the flowers back to the people at the whorehouse, you know, you can see he generally felt remorse. And he is a good guy, so he's going to help in that way.
Yeah.
I love it. All right, guys, as we get wrapped up here on episode 3 In Vain, remember, if you are on either iTunes or YouTube, hit subscribe. We want you guys to follow everything we do. And while you're at it, go on Facebook and Twitter, // whatever you call it, AfterBuzz TV on both. You can like us, follow us, do all that sort of stuff. Time for social links with ourselves, our hosts here. Guys, where can we find you on Twitter, Instagram, wherever else?
Okay. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Miss Jessie Owen.
You can follow me at Koppel for Mayor, KOPPELFORMAYOR.
Koppel for Mayor, Miss Jessie Owen. And, of course, Marissa is the most popular out of all four hosts on this show. Marissa,
I really doubt that.
The guys want to know, where can they find you?
You can follow me on Twitter and on Instagram at SerafiniTV.
Did you see that? She's been talking to us all day, and the second that we talked about guys wanting to know, she looked dead into the camera. She was like, I'm going to talk right to you guys.
I am talking to you guys.
Yeah. I like your style. I am at Bobby DeMuro. Guys, that's it on the Salem After Show for episode 3 In Vain. Thank you so much for joining us. We will see you next week.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.